Imagine a titan of industry, rich in history, a name synonymous with unparalleled luxury and engineering excellence. For many of you, that name, Rolls-Royce, it immediately conjures images of, well, opulent handcrafted cars, the majestic Phantom, maybe, or the commanding Cullinan. But today, we are peeling back the layers on something entirely different and, frankly, arguably far more impactful on global industry, our energy future, and even, you know, national security. Forget the cars for a moment. We're talking about Rolls-Royce Holdings PLC. This is the engineering powerhouse that provides the very pulse for wide-body jets crisscrossing our skies, builds the nuclear reactors deep within the UK's submarine fleet, and ensures critical power systems hum reliably around the globe. We're about to embark on a deep dive into a story of pretty dramatic corporate transformation, a veritable phoenix rising from the ashes.
It is remarkable, isn't it, how much the public perception of this company has, well, lagged behind its actual evolution. Most people do still cling to that luxury automotive image, completely unaware of the industrial behemoth Rolls-Royce Holdings has become and the extraordinary journey it's undertaken in just the last few years. This deep dive will really cut through that outdated view, providing you with a concise, well-informed understanding of a pivotal global player and its surprising, often overlooked potential to shape our future.
And to guide us through this pretty intricate story, we've had a stack of incredibly detailed investment research analyses, comprehensive company reports, you know, including their annual results, and strategic overviews. Our mission for you today is really to distill the most important nuggets of knowledge from all this material, basically giving you a shortcut to understanding the remarkable turnaround this company has undergone, its enduring competitive advantages in some really tough industries, the significant long-term growth opportunities that are now firmly on the horizon, and, of course, the key risks involved. It's a compelling narrative of resilience, reinvention, and a very forward-looking vision. So let's set the stage with the big picture, an investment thesis that our sources lay out built on three core pillars. This framework helps us understand why Rolls-Royce Holdings PLC stands at such a pivotal juncture right now. Just a few years ago, this was a company navigating, well, intense operational and financial distress, almost teetering on the edge. But what we're about to explore is a story of how it has emerged as a revitalized, strategically focused enterprise, with results that have genuinely outpaced initial expectations. This isn't just about survival. It's really about a company aggressively redefining its future.
That's the critical distinction, yeah. And it's a point our sources emphasize repeatedly, that this isn't merely incremental improvements or, you know, riding a cyclical market wave. It's a testament to a fundamental strategic overhaul. The company is actively redefining its operational structure and its long-term value creation, moving beyond its traditional aerospace focus in some quite surprising ways. The first pillar of this thesis is what our analysis terms the credible and executed turnaround. We're not just talking about hopeful projections here. We're seeing dramatic financial improvements from, say, 2022 to 2024 that are direct, measurable outcomes of a rigorous management-led transformation. This involved a relentless focus on commercial optimization, stringent cost discipline, and a far more disciplined approach to capital allocation than perhaps seen in previous eras.
Exactly. And to truly unpack that, commercial optimization wasn't just a buzzword, was it? It meant things like renegotiating those massive, long-term total care service contracts with airlines for better terms, improved margins, ensuring they were getting, you know, fair value for their indispensable engine maintenance. Stringent cost discipline involved a complete overhaul of their spending, probably implementing something like zero-based budgeting, where every single expense had to be justified from scratch, not just rolled over from the previous year.
Right.
And disciplined capital allocation meant they stopped chasing every market share opportunity at any cost, instead focusing only on investments that promised the highest, most sustainable returns. These are the real nuts and bolts of how they pulled off this turnaround.
Precisely. And this leads us right into the second color, the enduring strength of their high barrier franchises. What this phrase really means for you is that Rolls-Royce's core businesses aren't just good. They possess incredibly significant and sustainable competitive moats. Think of these as deep trenches around a castle, right? Making it extremely difficult for competitors to enter or challenge. These businesses are protected by decades of multi-billion dollar technological investment, massive installed bases of their product already operating globally, and those highly profitable long-term service contracts that create incredibly sticky, recurring revenue streams. Just think about the sheer regulatory hurdles, the certification costs, the decades of R&D required to design and certify a new wide-body aircraft engine. It's almost insurmountable for a new entrant. It really is.
And then the third pillar, which I find particularly compelling, is the significant yet often underappreciated portfolio of long-term growth options. This isn't just about small, incremental, improvements to existing products. Our sources really zoom in on the potential of the small modular reactor, or SMR, business. This particular venture isn't just some side project. It's poised to fundamentally redefine the company's strategic profile over the next decade. Why? Because it's positioned to be a key enabler of the global energy transition. It represents a material, long-duration growth catalyst that could fundamentally alter the company's valuation profile, transforming it from primarily an aerospace and defense player into a significant player in the clean energy sector. But how do we know this turnaround is real? The proof, as they say, is in the pudding, or in this case, the raw financial data. And what those numbers reveal is an extraordinary story of resilience, a financial recovery truly forged in the crucible of crisis. We're talking about a dramatic surge in profitability and margin expansion that are, frankly, nothing short of remarkable.
Our sources detail a near quadrupling of underlying operating profit, soaring from $652 million in 2022 to a staggering $2.5 billion in 2024. Think about that, almost four times the profit in just 2 years. It's an incredible pace of recovery.
That's the critical question, isn't it? Sustainability. And this isn't just about increasing top-line revenue. It's underpinned by a dramatic structural expansion in operating margins. The group's underlying operating margin expanded from mere 5.1% in 2022 to a really robust 13.8% in 2024. What's crucial here is that this wasn't isolated to one area. It was a broad-based improvement across all three core divisions, signaling a systemic shift. Civil Aerospace, for instance, saw its margin jump from a pretty paltry 2.5% in 2022 to 11.6% in 2023. Defense, always a stable performer, improved to 13.8%. Power Systems climbed from 8.4% to 10.4% in that same period. This broad improvement is directly attributable, as the analysis highlights, to that commercial optimization, securing better terms on existing contracts and cost efficiencies through rigorous internal program.
Right. And what truly sets this apart, I think, is the sheer speed of this transformation. Our sources indicate that this performance has actually outstripped the company's own initial projections. They are on track to achieve their profit and cash flow target 2 years earlier than they guided at their November 2023 Capital Markets Day. This acceleration, it lends significant credibility to management's execution. It tells you this isn't just luck or a temporary bounce back. It's a deep structural re-engineering of the entire business, executed with remarkable precision.
Indeed, and a key underlying driver of this sustainable improvement is the structural change in the company's cost base. Our sources introduce a critical, albeit maybe a bit technical, metric here, the total cash cost to gross margin, or TCCGM ratio. In plain English, this ratio tells you how much of the money they make from selling their products and services, their gross profit, is immediately eaten up by operating cash costs like R&D, admin salaries, sales expenses, that kind of thing. Rolls-Royce saw a remarkable fall in this ratio from 0.80x in 2022 down to what's now described as a best-in-class 0.47x in 2024. That's a massive improvement. It suggests that this isn't a temporary fix, but a fundamental re-engineering of their cost base that will pay dividends, quite literally, for years to come. This was a direct result of structural cost-out programs, including that zero-based budgeting we mentioned, and over $500 million in cumulative procurement savings, fundamentally enhancing their operating leverage, meaning more profit falls to the bottom line for every dollar of revenue.
And the ultimate validation of any turnaround. It's robust cash flow generation and the fortification of the balance sheet. Free cash flow, or FCF, which is the cash a company generates after covering its operating expenses and capital expenditures, grew powerfully from $505 million in 2022 to a record $2.4 billion in 2024. That's nearly a five-fold increase. Think about that for a second. This robust cash generation enabled a dramatic deleveraging. They went from a net debt position of $3.3 billion at the end of 2022 to a net cash position of $475 million by the close of 2024. This isn't just a swing. It's a complete reversal of fortune, taking them from a precarious debt situation to a position of real financial strength.
Absolutely. This rapid fortification of the balance sheet was clearly a key strategic priority. And its achievement was recognized by all three major credit rating agencies, which restored the company's investment grade status in 2024. That's a crucial milestone because it signals financial stability, it lowers their cost of capital, making it cheaper to borrow money if needed, and significantly improves their financial flexibility. With a strong liquidity position now of £8.1 billion, consisting of cash and undrawn credit facilities, the company has a very solid foundation for future growth and navigating any unforeseen challenges. It's a testament to how far they've come.
And with the balance sheet repaired and cash flowing nicely, management has demonstrably shifted its focus to a disciplined capital allocation framework.
They've moved away from a historical emphasis on simply winning market share, maybe at any cost, to a clear, explicit focus on the quality of earnings, efficient cash conversion, and generating strong returns on capital. And in a clear, undeniable signal of confidence to the market and shareholders, they've reinstated the dividend. They proposed a final dividend of 6.00 pence per share, which is the first shareholder payment since 2020. That really underscores management's belief in the durability of their cash flow generation going forward.
That dividend reinstatement is a powerful statement, definitely. But it also raises an interesting question for us to consider, perhaps. Is this a touch premature for some analysts, especially given the ambitious capital-intensive SMR plans looming on the horizon? Or does it truly signal unwavering confidence in their underlying profitability and cash flow sustainability? The market seems to be leaning towards the latter, I'd say, interpreting it as a strong vote of confidence in their fundamental reengineering.
Yeah, that makes sense. And for those of you wanting to keep a close watch on Rolls-Royce's ongoing performance, our sources highlight several key monitoring metrics. Think of these as the company's vital signs, right? Giving you a clean, real-time picture of its health and trajectory. On the operational front, definitely monitor large engine flying hours, or EFH. This isn't just a number, it's the heartbeat of their civil aerospace business, directly driving those incredibly profitable total care service revenues. More planes flying means more money for Rolls-Royce. Simple as that. You'll also want to track engine shop visits and deliveries, because these indicate both the health of their fleet and their market momentum. And of course, the order backlog across all divisions provides crucial visibility into future revenues.
And from a financial perspective, free cash flow FCF generation remains the ultimate measure of their transformation success. It's really the purest indicator of financial health. Net debt to EBITDA is crucial for assessing their balance sheet health and leverage, while return on invested capital, or ROIC, reveals the efficiency of their capital allocation, basically. Are they getting good bang for their buck? Finally, keep a close eye on segment-level operating margins for each core division. These will show you if the profitability improvements are holding across the board or if one area is lagging.
And strategically, you'll definitely want to monitor the SMR program progress. Look for specific milestones like the completion of the UK's generic design assessment, the GDA, which is a major regulatory hurdle. Also, watch for firm orders and new international partnerships for SMRs. That's key. Any improvement in engine time on wing or 2W for their existing Trent fleet will signal success in their efforts to improve engine durability and reliability, which is a critical operational goal we'll touch on later. These are the metrics that matter most for understanding their journey, I think. Okay, let's unpack this further and dive into what our sources call the fortresses of industry, their core businesses. First up, civil aerospace, which is truly their wide-body powerhouse. This is not just their largest, but also their most strategically critical segment, driving both significant revenue and now a substantial profit. Our sources highlight its formidable market position. Rolls-Royce powers 4 out of 5 new generation large aircraft types, holds a commanding 33% share of the global in-service large engine fleet, and an even stronger 41% share of all wide-body engines currently on order. That, my friends, is market dominance in a highly specialized high-barrier industry.
Yeah, it's quite something. And a key insight we pulled from the research is how they cemented that position even further in 2023, which was actually the best year for wide-body engine orders since way back in 2007. This wasn't just a general market rebound. Rolls-Royce secured major contracts from flagship carriers like Air India, Turkish Airlines, Emirates too. Consequently, over half of all new wide-body aircraft delivered in 2023 were powered by Rolls-Royce engines, continuously growing their massive installed base of over, 4,860 engines. This is a very sticky business, as you can imagine. The cost of switching engine providers is enormous once an airline commits to an airframe.
It really is the golden goose, isn't it? Imagine signing a contract for your car, where the manufacturer not only sells you the car, but also guarantees its maintenance and performance for the next 15 years, getting paid every mile you drive. That's essentially what Rolls-Royce does with Total Care for airlines. It's a brilliant, sticky business model. The division's business model is centered on monetizing this massive installed base through their Total Care long-term service agreements. These contracts can span 15 years or more and generate incredibly profitable recurring revenue streams directly tied to engine flying hours, or EFH. As long-haul travel recovered post-pandemic, EFH reached 88% of 2019 levels in 2023, driving a significant 25% increase in services revenue to £4.6 billion. This predictability and profitability are a huge competitive advantage.
However, the strategic focus on the wide-body market is not without its risks, and this is an important nuance to grasp. While it offers higher barriers to entry and more lucrative aftermarket revenue per engine, it also exposes the company more acutely to downturns in long-haul international travel, as we saw dramatically during the COVID-19 pandemic. Furthermore, the rise of capable long-range narrow-body aircraft like the Airbus A321 XLR presents a nuanced long-term challenge. These aircraft are increasingly capable of serving long, thin routes, think transatlantic flights, between smaller cities that were previously the exclusive domain of smaller wide-body jets. This raises an important question about how Rolls-Royce maintains that competitive edge and market share as the aviation landscape subtly evolves towards these more efficient, versatile narrow bodies.
Interesting point. Now, for a segment that truly balances the portfolio, while civil aviation can be volatile, their defense division is an absolute rock. It serves as a crucial source of stability and long-term predictable cash flow, acting as a powerful counterbalance to civil aerospace's inherent cyclicality. Our sources point out its unique sole source position as the designer and manufacturer of nuclear reactors for the entire UK Royal Navy submarine fleet. That, my friends, is not just a high barrier franchise. It's a unique national security imperative, ensuring decades of secured contracts.
Right. And this division is currently seeing significant tailwinds from the current geopolitical climate. Global military expenditure, according to our research, saw its steepest year-on-year increase in 2024 since the end of the Cold War, rising by 9.4% to a staggering $2.7 trillion. This provides a strong supportive environment for their defense business, which is underpinned by a robust $9.2 billion order book, Eric. They also have franchise-defining multi-decade contracts. Think about their contract to re-engine the entire U.S. Air Force B-52 bomber fleet with their F-130 engine. That's a generational project, really. Or their critical role in providing reactors for Australia's new nuclear-powered submarines under the AUKUS Security Pact. These government-backed contracts provide incredible long-term revenue visibility, insulated from commercial ups and downs, and the division delivered a strong, healthy operating margin of 13.8% in 2023. It's a true anchor for the company.
Definitely. Beyond the thunderous roar of jet engines and the quiet power of submarines, there's another crucial segment, often operating below the radar: power systems. This division, quietly but effectively, is powering something truly fundamental to our modern world, the digital age. Operating under the M2 brand, it provides mission-critical, integrated power and propulsion solutions to incredibly diverse industrial markets, including essential power generation, governmental applications, and marine.
Yeah, and a key insight here is how power systems, with its strong link to the secular growth of data centers, represents a robust, non-cyclical growth driver. Data centers, as you know, require incredibly reliable backup power solutions to prevent outages, which is a core offering of this division. This connection led to a remarkable 34% surge in its power generation business in 2023 and overall underlying revenue growth of 16% for the division. Pretty impressive. This diversification is absolutely crucial for Rolls-Royce, providing resilience and stable earnings that can support R&D and investment in other parts of the business, like those ambitious SMR projects. Their operating margin also climbed significantly to 10.4% in 2023 from 8.4% in 2022, directly benefiting from those better pricing strategies and cost efficiencies achieved during the transformation.
So after looking at Rolls-Royce's impressive internal transformation, what does this all mean when we look at the giants in the room? We have to consider competitive benchmarking, right? How does Rolls-Royce stack up against its primary aerospace peers like GE Aerospace, Safran, and RTX's Pratt & Whitney? GE Aerospace, for example, with its commercial engines and services segment, is often seen as the industry benchmark for profitability. They reported an exceptionally high operating profit margin of 26.2% on revenues of $26.9 billion in 2024. That figure really highlights the significant potential for further margin expansion at Rolls-Royce as its transformation continues and its operations mature. There's still room to grow.
For sure. And Safran, for its part, also demonstrates strong performance in its propulsion segment, achieving a 20.6% operating margin in 2024. They've been particularly successful in the high-volume narrow-body market, where they are a dominant player. Then we have Pratt & Whitney, a subsidiary of RTX, which serves as a bit of a cautionary tale on technical risk, a lesson keenly observed by the industry, I imagine. After incurring a significant operating loss in 2023 due to widespread reliability issues with powder metal components in its GTF engines, which grounded hundreds of aircraft and caused immense customer frustration, they only recovered to a 7.2% operating margin in 2024.
Wow. Yeah, that Pratt & Whitney example is a stark reminder of just how critical engine reliability is in this industry and the severe financial and operational consequences that can arise from problems. It's a lesson Rolls-Royce has certainly learned from its own past, costly experiences with the Trent 1000. While Rolls-Royce's group operating margins are improving dramatically to 13.8% in 2024, they still clearly lag best-in-class peers like GE Aerospace. The takeaway here is clear. Rolls-Royce is making huge strides in profitability, but there's still a gap to close with the very best in class, and that gap represents both opportunity and a challenge. Okay, so Rolls-Royce isn't content just fixing the past. They're innovating aggressively for the future. Let's talk about next-generation propulsion and how they're staying ahead in the skies. The cornerstone of their long-term technological leadership in civil aerospace seems to be the UltraFan demonstrator. This isn't just an upgrade. Our sources describe it as a step change in gas turbine architecture, incorporating a gear design, advanced composite fan blades, and a completely new engine core. Its promise is substantial. A 25% improvement in fuel efficiency over first-generation Trent engines, which translates directly to lower emissions and significant operating cost savings for airlines. That's a massive competitive advantage.
Exactly. And what's particularly forward-looking about the UltraFan architecture is its scalability, making it a potential candidate for both future wide-body and even narrow-body aircraft. Crucially, it's designed to be 100% compatible with sustainable aviation fuel, or SF, from day one. This means it can contribute to decarbonization efforts right out of the gate. In the highly profitable business aviation segment, they're also cementing their leadership with the new Pearl engine family. The Pearl 700 powers Gulfstream's new flagship G700 and G800 jets, while the more powerful Pearl 10X has been selected for Dassault's upcoming Falcon 10X, a real testament to its performance.
And here's an interesting strategic shift that highlights their newfound financial discipline, I think. The company has explicitly stated that new business aviation engine deliveries are now profitable. That's a significant change from the historical model of relying solely on aftermarket services for profitability in this segment. They're making money from day one on these engines, which contributes to that robust cash flow we discussed earlier. It's a smaller detail, perhaps, but indicative of a larger philosophical shift within the company.
Definitely. Now, if everything we've discussed so far has been impressive, this next point is arguably the most radical and potentially transformative for the entire company. We're talking about the SMR Revolution's small modular reactors. What makes this so much more than just another project for Rolls-Royce? The Rolls-Royce SMR business isn't just a side venture. It's arguably the most significant long-term growth catalyst they possess. They are developing a 470 milliwatt factory-built nuclear power plant based on proven and reliable pressurized water reactor, or PWR, technology.
Okay, so a nuclear power plant, but factory-built. Yep. What's the real innovation there? It sounds like they're not reinventing nuclear physics, but rather the how of building them. Is that right?
Exactly. That's the key. The core innovation here isn't about inventing new nuclear physics. It's about making nuclear power like building with Legos, almost. Instead of constructing one giant, bespoke, multi-decade project on-site, they're factory-building standardized, smaller reactors and modules. This drastically cuts costs, construction time, and crucially, project risk, which has historically plagued large nuclear projects. This modular approach is potentially a true game-changer for nuclear deployment globally, addressing the enormous demand for clean, reliable, base-load electricity. This demand is driven by the electrification of economies and, of course, the exponential growth of energy-intensive data centers, which require constant, stable power.
And this initiative has gained substantial commercial and political momentum. It's really moving from a conceptual project to a credible business venture with tangible progress. On the regulatory front, the Rolls-Royce SMR design has successfully completed step two of the UK's rigorous generic design assessment, or GDA, and is now in its final stage. This makes it the most advanced SMR design in any European regulatory process. That's a huge de-risking milestone in a highly regulated industry.
Indeed. And commercially, it has been selected as a preferred technology partner by Great British Energy Nuclear for the UK's first fleet of SMRs. That's significant. Internationally, it has also been chosen by major European utilities, including EZ in the Czech Republic for a potential 3GW deployment, and Vattenfall in Sweden. These regulatory and commercial milestones are not just headlines. They are tangible proof of its credibility and clear path to market. This venture really does have the potential to transform Rolls-Royce from a pure-play aerospace and defense industrial into a key player in the global energy transition. As the SMR unit progresses from a development cost center towards generating positive cash flow, which they're targeting for late 2025, and profitability by 2030, the market will likely begin to assign a discrete and very substantial valuation to this business, fundamentally altering Rolls-Royce's long-term profile.
Right. Now, beyond SMRs, Rolls-Royce is also deeply invested in sustainable aviation fuels, or SAF, and hydrogen,
right,
all aimed at decarbonizing flight, aligning perfectly with global climate goals.
They've successfully completed testing to prove that all their in-production civil aero engines, including the entire Trent family and the Pearl engines, are compatible with 100% SAF. This is critical, as S is widely considered the most viable near-to-medium-term solution for reducing long-haul aviation's carbon footprint, given the existing infrastructure.
And looking further ahead, the company, in partnership with EasyJet, conducted the world's first successful ground test of a modern aero engine running on green hydrogen. Now, while hydrogen propulsion faces significant infrastructure and aircraft design challenges that are still probably decades away from widespread commercialization, this cutting-edge research positions Rolls-Royce at the forefront of a potential long-term technological shift, ensuring they're ready for whatever the future of flight holds.
And here's where it all connects in a truly unique and powerful way. The SMR-SAF synergy. Our sources point out a compelling, almost closed-loop connection between these two strategies. It's fascinating. One of the primary barriers to widespread SAF adoption, particularly synthetic e-fuels, is the immense amount of clean, low-cost energy required for its production. Rolls-Royce isn't just making cleaner engines. They're aiming to sell you the entire clean energy ecosystem for aviation.
That's the mind-blowing insight, isn't it? Rolls-Royce explicitly markets its SMRs as a solution for manufacturing synthetic fuels. This creates a compelling vision and the potential for a truly closed-loop value chain. Rolls-Royce wouldn't just be manufacturing the engines that consume SAF, they could also be providing the core technology, the SMRs, to produce the clean energy needed to create that very fuel. This unique positioning could offer a truly powerful and potentially game-changing proposition for the entire aviation ecosystem, especially to governments and energy partners focused on building a sustainable aviation future. It offers a path to energy independence and a much greener footprint. It's a full-stack solution, really.
Okay, while Rolls-Royce's transformation and growth prospects are incredibly compelling, it's crucial to acknowledge that this journey is not without its significant headwinds. We need to prioritize the risk factors. These aren't just minor bumps in the road. These are material risks that Rolls-Royce must actively manage. It's a reminder that even the most successful turnarounds operate within a complex and unpredictable global landscape. And understanding these risks is just as important as appreciating the opportunities.
Absolutely. And the most significant and immediate operational risk, according to our sources, centers on engine reliability and durability. The company has a history of costly technical challenges, most notably the Trent 1000 and 900 engine issues from maybe a decade ago. These led to over 1 billion pounds in charges, significant operational disruption for airline customers, and, well, a dent in their hard-earned reputation. While those specific issues have largely been addressed through substantial investment, concerns about engine durability persist for some of their newer engines. More recently, prominent customers like Emirates have publicly criticized the time on wing, or TOW, performance of the Trent XWB-97 engine, which powers the Airbus A350-1000, particularly in harsh operating environments. Rolls-Royce is actively investing to mitigate this, with a £1 billion multi-year program aimed at improving the durability of its modern Trent engines, focusing on things like more resilient coatings for turbine blades and components to extend time between overhauls. The success of this program is really critical for managing aftermarket costs and maintaining hard-won customer confidence.
And compounding this technical challenge is the fragile state of the global aerospace supply chain. This isn't just a Rolls-Royce problem, it's industry-wide. The entire industry, from raw material suppliers to specialized component manufacturers, is grappling with persistent shortages of everything from raw materials and complex forged and cast components to skilled labor. For Rolls-Royce, these bottlenecks directly impact both the production of new engines and, critically, the capacity of the maintenance, repair, and overhaul, or MRO network, to service the existing fleet. Management has indicated that they expect these supply chain challenges to remain a significant factor for another, 18 to 24 months, making their operational planning incredibly complex.
Yeah, and this raises an important question. Can they effectively manage this dual challenge? Because it's tough. The combination of engine durability issues and a strained supply chain creates a potent negative feedback loop. When an engine requires more frequent maintenance due to a durability issue, it places additional demand on an MRO network that is already capacity constrained by labor and parts shortages. This can lead to longer turnaround times for engine repairs, forcing airlines to ground aircraft, causing further customer frustration, and potentially incurring financial penalties for Rolls-Royce. Furthermore, supply chain bottlenecks can slow down the production and distribution of the newly designed, more durable parts needed to fix the underlying reliability issues across the in-service service fleet. This dynamic means that the financial and operational drag from durability problems may have a longer tail and be more costly to resolve than initially anticipated. It's a real knot to untangle.
Definitely. And beyond these technical and operational risks, there are broader execution and macroeconomic risks to consider. Rolls-Royce's financial performance, particularly its civil aerospace division, remains heavily exposed to the cyclical health of the global economy and commercial aviation. A significant global economic downturn would directly impact engine flying hours, as fewer people travel, and consequently, their high-margin aftermarket revenues would suffer. That's a given. There's also considerable execution risk with their ambitious strategic plan. While the initial phase of their transformation has been remarkably successful, achieving their ambitious midterm financial targets requires sustained operational excellence and cost discipline in what remains a challenging and unpredictable global environment. Any failure to maintain this momentum could definitely undermine investor confidence and erase some of those hard-won gains.
And we can't ignore the geopolitical and regulatory headwinds either, which are increasingly relevant for a company operating at this scale. As a global aerospace and defense company, Rolls-Royce is exposed to risks like escalating trade tensions, the imposition of tariffs on key materials, or export controls, which could disrupt operations and increase costs significantly. Also, the global push towards decarbonization, while a massive opportunity with SMRs and SAF, also presents a significant regulatory risk. Increasingly stringent environmental regulations, especially in Europe, may necessitate unforeseen R&D investments or accelerate the obsolescence of older technologies, forcing costly upgrades or redesigns. It cuts both ways.
So what does this all mean for how you, the listener, should think about its value? Our sources emphasize that a precise price target is beyond the scope of this deep dive, but they provide an excellent framework for assessing Rolls-Royce's valuation. You can't just put a simple sticker price on a company this complex. It requires a multifaceted approach that goes beyond simple peer comparisons. Accounting for the unique characteristics of each business segment and the long-term optionality embedded in its strategy, particularly with SMRs.
Right. A standard starting point is relative valuation, comparing Rolls-Royce's trading multiples like forward price to earnings or enterprise value to EBITDA to direct peers such as GE Aerospace, RTX, and Safran. However, a simple comparison can be misleading here. Rolls-Royce currently exhibits a significantly higher near-term earnings growth profile because of its ongoing turnaround, which could justify a premium multiple. But its operating margins, while dramatically improving, still lag best-in-class players like GE Aerospace's impressive 26.2%. The central question for relative valuation is whether the market gains confidence that Rolls-Royce can sustainably close this margin gap. If they can, that would warrant a significant re-rating towards those peer levels.
This is where a sum of the parts, or SOTP, analysis becomes particularly useful given the disparate nature of Rolls-Royce's business segments. This involves valuing each division separately, almost like different puzzle pieces. Defense, for instance, should probably be valued against high-quality, pure-play defense contractors because its long-term, government-backed contracts like the B-52 re-engine or the Arquitas Pact, it would likely command the highest and most stable multiple. Power Systems can be benchmarked against high-quality industrial peers, with its valuation sensitive to strong data center growth trends, potentially warranting a premium.
Exactly. Civil Aerospace, meanwhile, is best valued against direct aerospace OEM peers, with its multiple heavily influenced by the outlook for long-haul travel, engine flying hours growth, and the perceived sustainability of its high-margin aftermarket business. And then there's the SMR business. This is the tricky one. Its true value isn't in today's cash flows because it's still in its early capital-intensive phase. It cannot be valued on traditional metrics as it currently generates losses. Instead, it's best viewed as a long-dated call option on the future of clean energy. Its value is derived from the probability-weighted potential of its future commercial success. Each new regulatory approval, like the GDA, and commercial agreement, like those with EASY and Vattenfall, de-risks the venture and increases its intrinsic option value. This really challenges us, I think, to think critically about how sophisticated investors weigh a proven turnaround against truly transformative but long-dated growth potential.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, for intrinsic value, using something like a discounted cash flow or DCF model would be highly sensitive to key long-term variables. Things like the long-term growth in wide-body EFH, the sustainability of aftermarket margins, the magnitude and timing of capital expenditures for SMR commercialization, and of course the ultimate success of UltraFan. Our sources emphasize the high degree of uncertainty inherent in these assumptions, particularly the timeline and ultimate profitability of the SMR business.
That SMR segment represents the largest source of potential upside, and conversely, the largest source of risk in the long-term valuation case. It's a complex picture, to say the least.
That's the crux of it. The challenge of valuing such a diverse portfolio, particularly that SMR option, is immense. Its true value isn't in today's immediate cash flows, but in its progress through these critical milestones and the partnerships it forms. It forces investors to project far into the future and assess both the probability and the scale of success for technology that could fundamentally change the company. It's a compelling, multifaceted investment story, no doubt. #outro.
And that wraps up our deep dive into Rolls-Royce Holdings PLC. It's truly been a story of strategic transformation and audacious vision. We've seen a company that not only survived financial distress, but has emerged with a remarkable financial turnaround, driven by a rigorous, management-led transformation. Its core businesses, civil aerospace, defense, and power systems, stand as true fortresses of industry, each with enduring competitive advantages and crucially predictable revenue streams.
And perhaps most excitingly, we've explored the truly transformative potential of its future growth catalysts, particularly the SMR business and its unique, maybe even game-changing, synergy with sustainable aviation fuels. This isn't just about incremental improvements. It's about positioning Rolls-Royce at the very forefront of two massive global shifts: decarbonizing flight and securing clean baseload energy. However, as we've discussed, this journey is not without significant technical, operational, and macroeconomic risks, which demand continuous monitoring and disciplined management from their leadership team.
So, as you process all of this, maybe ask yourself, can this nearly 120-year-old engineering giant, a company that was financially on the ropes just a few years ago, truly pull off not one, but two industrial revolutions, decarbonizing flight A&D, leading the charge in clean nuclear energy? Considering Rolls-Royce's incredible journey from financial distress to not only stabilizing its core, but actively positioning itself at the forefront of the global energy transition with SMRs and sustainable aviation fuels, how do you weigh the proven track record of their turnaround against the ambitious, capital-intensive, and long-dated promise of redefining the future of energy and flight? It's a big question.
And as you reflect on this, what stands out most to WeU? Is it the sheer scale of the financial comeback, the unwavering stability and geopolitical tailwinds for the defense division, or the long-term, perhaps game-changing potential of the SMR business? It really challenges us to think critically about how we value both resilience and radical, forward-looking innovation in today's complex global economy. This deep dive should hopefully prompt you to think about how even established companies can adapt, innovate, and strive to shape an ever-changing world.